We are here now in the studio with Councilman Carl Stokes. Good to see you, Carl.
Hi, Mark.
Your mic is not quite on yet. We'll get that up there. Now you're on.
Great. Good to be with you, Mark. Thanks for inviting me in this afternoon.
We're also joined here by phone by Erica Green, who is a reporter who's been covering the education audit for the Baltimore Sun and doing a great job as usual. Erica, good to have you with us as well.
Thank you very much.
We're also joined by the Reverend Glenna Reed Huber, who is co-chair of BILD, Baltimoreans United for Leadership Development, and is a pastor of the Holy Nativity Episcopal Church, and the Reverend Foster Connors, who is also a clergy co-chair on BILD, and pastor of Brown Memorial Church, Brown Memorial Park Avenue Presbyterian Church, and both of them co-wrote an op-ed about the education system on the heels of this audit, and Reverend Foster Connors and Reverend Glenna Reed Huber, welcome to have you both with us as well.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mark.
And the lines are open at 410-319-8888. So let me just start with Erica Green. Erica, you started writing about these stories on the audit, and I wonder what has happened since. I mean, this has been a huge story that broke.
And
I had some conversations today with people in the school system. They'll be on this program tomorrow, talking about their response to the audit. But talk about what you've learned since these findings that in this preliminary draft. Because what you reported on, pardon my speaking too quickly, what you reported on was not the the audit itself, but a preliminary draft of that audit, correct?
Right. So what we initially went with was the preliminary findings, which, you know, were the initial ones that auditors first noted when they went in to review the system, the system's finances. It was not, you know, it wasn't a set of notes per se. It was very much in the form of an audit, but obviously they were preliminary and they weren't, packaged for publication by any stretch. But the final audit that followed was, you know, was very much the same. There was nothing that was really different. And in our coverage, we kind of said where some things dropped off, they didn't drop off because they weren't true. They dropped off because they were, you know, they had an explanation or had some documentation or had been resolved. So since then, since we published on, I'm sorry.
Go ahead. Some feedback. It's not you, though. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Okay. Since we broke the story on Sunday, we verified the information. We thought we had enough to go with. We wrote the story. And, you know, over the course of the week, several, you know, city leaders came forward and said that obviously the findings were unacceptable. When the final audit was published on Thursday, and very much, you know, for the vast majority of it, the same form, the same findings, those criticisms and those concerns just continued. So since then, I will say that there have definitely been some citizen watchdogs who have stepped up and kind of took it upon themselves to look more deeply into the system's histories of audits. And we are, you know, we're in communication and we're talking a lot about, what they've been doing internally in terms of, you know, checking their books and checking their systems over the years. So that's kind of something that I'm working with some residents on and that I'll follow up with in a couple of weeks.
And of course, the school system has said, and before we bring in our BILD members, I just want to bring Carl in here.
Yes, thanks.
It's good to have you in the studio with us. And some of the school system people said to me today that, look, they couldn't really respond immediately because they were not allowed to because it was just a draft and there wasn't the full report.
Sure.
But since it's come out, they said, look, like things like the computer issue was really kind of blown out of proportion. That these are mostly old computers. They've been thrown out, or they're not really 1,200 missing computers, or and issues like that. And that the whole issue of things like people being paid for paid leave. I mean, anybody who's been a school teacher or been married to a school teacher knows that that happens every year with school teachers who've had perfect attendance records. They get paid for the sick days they didn't use. And that's always been part of what happens.
Sure. Well, that's not a good answer.
Why is that not a good answer?
It's not a good answer. Because it's part of a horrible culture of school and city management and the waste and the lack of oversight of public dollars, of taxpayer dollars. This has happened before. And after the 2006 audit, there were many things that have never been corrected since then, and now we've doubled the number of problems in the audit that happened 4 years later. This is from 2010. So not only don't they fix what they weren't doing well in 06, they've added to the list, and it seems that the CEO and the board's response is so cavalier that say, you know what, we're as bad as everybody else. That's the response that was written by the CEO, that there are other jurisdictions just as bad as Baltimore. So it's not such a big deal. It's a major deal when children, by the way, not only the system not managed well, but our children are not getting a very good education across the board in the Baltimore City public schools. Now, we can go by the hype and that we're doing much better. Mark, we're not doing much better for the children of Baltimore City. We have a lousy public school system, and you can look it up. Don't take Carl's words for it. Look it up yourself. And to continue to take an attitude when we're desperately in need of money for these young people in this city, that we can piss away tens of millions of dollars and excuse it by it happens every year, I don't think that's a good answer. You know, the city school system, who does an audit every 4 years, ought to do what everybody else in the system, in the city government. Don't do an audit at all. Why do an audit at all if you're not going to adhere to the recommendations of the audit that is done?
Erica. Well, might I just add something, please?
This is Erica?
Yeah, this is Erica.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not going to get into a back and forth about what was blown out of proportion or how I chose to present facts, but what I will say is that, you know, we did ask the school system for comment on the preliminary findings. They chose not to engage in that. And, they told us that on Thursday when the final draft was released that they would be more than happy to speak with us. And what we got was an email, which was what everyone else got. So if there were further explanations, there was plenty of opportunity and, you know, and request to do that. You know, 1,200 computers, 1,400. Whether they were old or new, they were still missing. And, you know, we presented that. We presented both of those numbers and all of that context. And, you know, I mean, we can't control how the school system chooses to respond, but that there was that opportunity.
So let me ask Foster Connor and Glenn Reed, if you were to join us now with your thoughts. I mean, you wrote this interesting editorial that took a slightly different tact. Glenn, could you talk a bit about that for those who have not read it and what you were kind of focusing on as a result of these audit investigations done by Erica Green and the Sun?
Sure. This is Glenna.
Go ahead, Glenn. I know there's a little feedback, but go ahead.
Okay. We wrote the article because we felt as if the city residents might lose sight in this audit debacle conversation of the children, and the facilities money is coming from is going to be overseen by a different entity, not the school system. And so we just wanted to point that out, which is why we wrote the article.
And Foster?
Yeah, just to add to what Reverend Reed was saying, what Reed Huber was saying, I think that we need to be careful in this conversation that we don't, in our zeal to hold the school system accountable, which Build fully supports, has done in the past, will continue to do in the present and the future. Let's not live into our history of a quick knee-jerk reaction to say, oh, there goes Baltimore City again, in such a way that we lose sight, as Reverend Huber said, we lose sight of the real needs of our kids. And I think in particular, the needs, the facility needs right now that we face in the city, somewhere in the order of around $2 billion in facility needs. I mean, anybody who's been in the schools knows exactly the condition that our buildings are in right now. And if we lose sight of the larger opportunities that we have right now for leveraging some big dollars to make a big impact on the school system. That's all we're pointing out, is let's not get distracted by this a recent discovery and lose sight of working together for our kids.
So what are you going to say? Go ahead, please, Carl.
The bigger picture is the system being accountable and responsible to the children and to the taxpayers. That is the bigger. It's tough for me. Frankly, it's not getting distracted. It is a distraction to say we're distracted, frankly, because the bigger picture is if the system is not being responsible, is not being honest, is not being transparent, is not being accountable for the dollars, then we cannot fix what needs to be fixed for our children, both physically in terms of the buildings and educationally, academically, and programmatically inside the classroom. That is the issue. The issue is whether or not they're responsible and accountable.
Well, Councilman, if I can, this is Reverend Foster Connors, if I can get a little more specific, a few points that we raised in the op-ed.
Well, Reverend Connors, let me say this. We have to take a very brief break, and we'll come back and we'll jump right into your comments. Is that okay?
Great, that's good. Thank
you. Give me 1 second, and we'll be right back. Folks, stay with us. We continue our conversation about the audits, our school system, with a reporter who broke the story, a city councilman who's been pushing the issue for a long time, two of our major community activists who are working on these issues as well. Join us here at 410-319-8888 with your experiences in your school. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner. On our way back to a conversation, I'll remind you that support for the Mark Steiner Show in part comes from the Maryland State Education Association. The Maryland Dream Act makes sure kids who graduated from a Maryland high school and whose parents have paid taxes for at least 3 years can pay in-state tuition. On November 6th, voters get to determine whether they agree with this or not. It's your choice to vote, and you need to vote no matter what you think. More information about ballot question 4 can be found at educatingmarylandkids.org. Remember to vote on November the 6th. We are joined here in studio by Councilman Carl Stokes. Erica Green joins us, reporter for the Baltimore Sun, who has been covering the audit question, broke the story, and continues to cover the school system for the Sun. We are also joined by phone here by the Reverend Glenna Reed Huber. It is Huber, right?
It's Huber, yeah.
Huber, I'm sorry. I'm going to make sure it was right, who is clergy co-chair the Baltimoreans United for Leadership Development, BILD. She's pastor of the Holy Nativity Episcopal Church. The Reverend Foster Connors joins us as well. He's also clergy co-chair for BILD and pastor at the Brown Memorial Park Avenue Presbyterian Church. 410-319-8888 is the number here as we talk about our schools. And Foster, you were about to launch into a conversation about your continuing thoughts. So please, I'm sorry, I had to interrupt you. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mark. I was just going to make the point. First of all, the councilman's absolutely right. Any CEO of any organization that has an audit, that has findings, needs to be held accountable to that. We fully support holding the CEO accountable to the findings of the audit, and we await to see how he will respond once we get to the final audit and he addresses those specifics. The point we were making in the op-ed is that we have more than 30 years of disinvestment in the facilities of public schools in the city. We have met with thousands of parents and teachers. We have walked through the schools. We see places where boilers aren't working or they're working too high in the winter. We see rain coming through the ceiling. These are well-documented problems that need to be addressed. And a broad coalition of groups, organizations, teachers, parents, individuals have come together to address them. There are all kinds of ways to build in to the work that we've called for down in Annapolis this year, build the kind of accountability that the councilman's talking about. And we pointed to a few of those examples in our op-ed, such as setting up a stadium authority kind of situation where you would have both accountability from within the school system and more external accountability from a group of leaders. Our biggest point was, let's not lose sight of this $2 billion need, which is real, and I would hope that the councilman would agree it is real, since it has been documented in a number of places by both people inside the school system and many outside of it, including folks in the business community, folks in the wider civic community. That's our point that we made today in this op-ed.
Yeah, pastors, you may, I'm not sure, but anyway, I came to Annapolis last year in full support of the bills that Build and the coalition, the BEC and ACLU were doing. I actually arrived or showed up in Annapolis for the hearings and spoke in full of support and said that the council of Baltimore City was in full support. And so I'm there with you. We're not on a different page on this
That's
at all.
Great. So, that's great. Right. That's good to hear.
Yeah.
You know, we were responding, I think, in part, Councilman and Mark, to some of the comments in the wider public arena where folks were immediately saying, well, this means that the coalition's efforts, the Baltimore Education Coalition's efforts, are basically dead in the water, that it's going to make it much harder to, you know, convince legislators that this kind of arrangement that we are proposing, which I should say, Mark, includes leveraging current funding for facilities in order to bond those current funds so that we could do an immediate renovation and rebuild totaling approximately $500 million. We've heard folks who kind of take advantage of the current situation to say, well, that's it, that's over. And so I'm very heartened to hear the councilman say he's fully behind that effort, and we thank him for all his efforts and look forward to working on this together in Annapolis.
Sure, so, Pastor. We're together, but and the butt is that it's not dead in the water, but you cannot, I cannot show up in Annapolis and say, hey, you know what, we really don't count our pennies well, we don't count our dollars well, but give us some more dollars to lose. And I'm not being facetious about that. People have a right to expect that if we're going to come before them and say, help us, help ourselves, that they have a right to expect that we're going to do due diligence and honor the sacrifice that has to be made all around. And when we bring those dollars back to Baltimore, that we're going to use them for our young people in a proper form.
So,
and I would say, can I interrupt?
Is this Glenna?
This is Erica.
Erica, go ahead.
I would say, you know, the officials that we spoke with for our stories and our follow-up, I mean, I can generally say that there was just a concern about going to Annapolis, not because they don't think that the block grant is possible, but because, you know, it takes an entire assembly to convince, and you have to convince, you know, legislators from Western Maryland who were very outspoken in the last session about their thoughts on whether or not, you know, they felt it was fair or reasonable to have Baltimore City get this commitment from the state. So it, you know, just from a reporting standpoint, it didn't occur, you know, it didn't seem to be that people thought it was dead in the water, but they just felt that any reservations that maybe anyone outside of the city may have had would be exacerbated by the state's finding.
So let me ask this question. There are two issues here that I'd like to push. And one is that in a moment to come back to what the reverends were saying a moment ago about the needs for rebuilding the infrastructure of the school system. I'm going to come back to that because it's really important and has to be dealt with and want to address that. But let me, in the context of something else, the public school system, and they'll be on here tomorrow, the chairman of the board will be here and the CFO will be here to talk about their perspective on this. And I wish we can create a dialogue across this would be great, and I want to try to do that very soon.
Sure.
But what they're saying, in essence, and Eric, let me start with you and then go over to Carl.
Okay.
Is that they are responding to the audit, that when it came out, they wrote a very long piece, that other than what they saw as the contractual and other obligations when it comes to paying teachers for sick days and unpaid leave, which every teacher has used for the last 50 years that I know of, right?
Mm-hmm.
That they are working on these things, that these audits are used to make the school system and any other agency better. And in fact, they do act on these things and they act to change them. Now, and I'm curious why either one of you, starting with Erica Green, from your perspective, just as a reporter watching this, or you as an elected figure looking at this as a citizen's representative, think that's not true. Or to what extent that's not true, Erica?
Well, I mean, what I will say is, you know, if we want to get, and I would love, you know, to get into the nitty gritty of the audit. I mean, anyone who reads it, they wouldn't have needed to read my story to draw any conclusions that they wouldn't have drawn on their own. But, you know, we wrote about overtime and leave earlier in the year, and those were very much defended by the system. I mean, you know, I brought that up, that, you know, the leave pay, it was generous compared to other districts. We brought up that it was a rather antiquated policy, just given the economic times. And the school system has definitely defended that. You know, the audit brought up issues such as, you know, let's not forget that the audit looked at whether or not, you know, all of the overtime was substantiated, or whether or not, you know, people were being paid excess of what they had earned in vacation leave and sick leave. And that, you know, there were cases of that. So I will say, I mean, in the audit, it's very clear. I mean, the one flat-out disagreement that the school system had with the auditors was finding that their leave payments were excessive, and that's right in the audit. Anybody can go read that. Because they do feel like, you know, it has a place in the system, as it has for decades. So it would be surprising to me to hear that that's a policy that they would be looking to revise, when it's something that, you know, has been vehemently defended all year, even before the audit came out. The improvements, they definitely, you know, for most of the findings, at least in the preliminary audit, they, because that was ongoing at the time, they were saying that, you know, they were developing policies and procedures to address most of what was found. I mean, one of the policies I saw, you know, get passed just 2 months ago. So definitely they said that it was an ongoing process, and that, you know, they were putting all these systems in place, which also, you know, I'm just a little concerned about, or not concerned, I'm sorry, I'm a little confused about the plan of action, and maybe that's because I didn't get to sit down and talk to anybody. But from what I could, you know, what I could see and what I've read in both of the audits, the district was looking to rectify anything that they really felt, you know, like unsubstantiated overtime, or, you know, missing computers or what have you, that they felt, you know, was an issue. But the leave pay, I mean, that's not one of them. That's not one that I've seen or heard even in the last year that they were going to be looking to address. So, mm-hmm. You know, that's that.
No, that's a good answer from your perspective as investigating this. So, right. Carl, and from a political perspective, what you don't think they're addressing the issues?
No. I don't think they're addressing the issues. So far, I've seen Neil Duke, who's a great administrator,
we'll be on the
great
show tomorrow.
Attorney. Great attorney, great administrator, great good guy. Moved the board in some very positive ways. They were called the best board in the United States of America under his leadership. I I've always spoken well of Andreas Alonso, but I don't think they've responded well to this, and because they haven't laid out a plan. They haven't said, "Yeah, mea culpa. We made some mistakes here, and here's how we're going to fix it." And by the way, every quarter, we're going to look at this, and we're going to tell you that we've either repaired it or where we are in getting this repaired. I understand the fact that they argue with whether or not their leave policies are too liberal. Okay, that's something the auditor just, you know, noted. That's not a fault per se. But there are other parts of the leave policy or the pay where they paid people who were deceased, people who just put in their time but wasn't checked, and they paid for that overtime. There were people who worked two jobs in the same hours,
right?
And we paid those people who said they were working at Coppin or wherever they were working. At the same time, they were getting paid. There are people who were vendors and employees of the system. And that is to say, they're the employees of the system, and they also got paid as a vendor to the system. So they bought products from themselves and got paid twice for consulting to that. Those things are not justifiable. Those things you can't say, well, we've been doing it for years, and it's okay. Other people do that. That's where I expect that people demand to ask them, what's your answer to that? What's your solution to that? Why is it? Or if you don't tell me why you're doing it in the past 10 years, tell me you're not going to do it anymore.
So let me, fostering Glenn, let me bring you back to conversation here. And I'm curious, this clearly is going to have legs and it's going to be pushed through the sun and it's going to be talked about in political circles and the school system will be pushed on it. But my sense is that you all are very concerned as leaders of BUILD that this is going to jeopardize, these conversations are going to jeopardize the monies that the billions of dollars needed to rebuild our schools, make the kids feel they have a place that they want to be in, and also maybe put their parents to work.
This is Glenna.
Go ahead, Glenna.
I think that, you know, there's a sense of urgency at this point regarding the facilities. And to leverage this money now keeps the cost around $2 billion. So, you know, the longer we wait, the higher costs go. It's a completely appropriate for citizens to want to know that the money is being spent appropriately, not mismanaged. And in Annapolis, we're hoping that we can make sure that we can put in oversight and accountability that would prevent any problems from happening. But the longer we wait, the more problematic it's going to be. So while the audit needs to be attended to and any problems brought up by the audit need to be addressed probably immediately, that should not distract, hopefully, from the funds that are needed to repair our facilities so that our children can have, you know, a quality education.
So, and Foster, did you want to add anything to that?
It was just, my only concern right now in the public debate is that we not lose sight of some of the details. I mean, details such as keeping in our minds a little bit of separation between the operating budget and the capital budget. If you speak to Dr. Lever at the state level, Baltimore City has a very excellent reputation in terms of their capital expenditures and the way they've managed those funds. All that's going to get lost in this conversation if suddenly everything is sort of like, oh, there goes the school system again, instead of really, really digging into the details of what's going on.
And Pastor, I don't think they are going to get lost. I think the needs are known, well known. I think, though, in the bigger picture, again, the issue of management issues.
Yes.
For example, the system has lost the opportunity to gain millions of dollars in capital because they won't manage their facilities better. You know, I'm talking about underutilization particularly. Those issues where, you know, the state superintendent comes into the system years ago and says, you know what, you've underutilizing your schools by 30% or 35% or whatever it is, which means you're throwing away good money in bad facilities. And but anyway, that's part of another project that's going on right now. I know that, but you got to understand,
right,
in the bigger picture, it is a matter of management, and it's not just perception, it's reality. And so all of us from Baltimore are very supportive of this, as we were 10 years ago when we got Thornton passed, but there are other folk from other parts of the state who have needs differently and are looking for some of the same dollars to build new schools, not repair old schools, but to build new schools because the population is booming in some of the other districts, and they're competing for these dollars. And so they've got to have a good sense that Baltimore's going to spend these dollars well.
Well, Erica, I'm curious what you'll be looking at. I want to know what are the critical areas that you think have to be answered that were not answered to your satisfaction as a journalist, and what you'll be probing.
And the audit.
Yes.
Well, I don't let out all my secrets. But
of course you don't, Erica. I don't mean I put everything on the table.
No, that's okay. No, but I really do think it's important to follow up just on, you know, how the system is checking itself. It's subject to, you know, several external audits a year. Both, you know, well, they did hire a company, a CPA, to do audits every year. And then they also have an internal auditing office. And like I said, with you know, some other kind of citizen watchdogs, I call them, like Kim Trueheart and Audit Baltimore, it's been, you know, it's been kind of interesting to go and see, you know, kind of the timeline of when they did some of the auditing, you know, internally, and kind of we're very much interested to see what the company they hired to audit them came up with in the last couple of years, and kind of compare and look across, you know, all areas to see if, you know, some of these are very long-standing issues, or if they're just, you know, it's just a constant self-evaluation for the district. So, you know, I do think that, you know, we owe it to them to kind of to delve into that as well. And also, you know, the Sun, it has been supportive on its editorial pages. We've, you know, front page stories about the needs of the school facilities. I mean, I've written about it for the last year and a half. I mean, all the time. So we'll definitely just continue to monitor those two, because, you know, the accountability and the needs of the students are obviously very, very important. And we want to make sure that in the end we're just working for, you know, the public good, and that we're also holding people accountable. So that's kind of what I'm, you know, kind of testing the temperature, particularly as we gear up for the session, and make sure that I just keep in contact with the district and also with advocates like Bill.
So I would tune in tomorrow night, Erica, because we have the CFO and the chairman of the board on. We'll see what they have to say.
I sure will.
I'll be listening too.
So, but coming back to the larger conversation that we had, that the audits affect, but beyond the audits, I mean, the question is, I don't mean this to throw things askew with this, but I just right. something I just
what now? Yeah, that's what you ask. You say what now?
And what now? What do we do? And what do we talk about? What we mean is about where the school system should go. Right. You know, the other day I visited a Catholic school, not run by the Catholic Church.
Okay,
that I did a little event for.
Sure.
Who's smarter than a sixth grader?
Oh, right. That right. I heard right. that. I was away. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it was the Sisters Academy.
Yes.
Over in Lansdowne. But all the kids come from Southwest Baltimore, sure. Cherry Hill, West Baltimore, and like that.
Right.
And it was a facility that was too big for the student population. 60 kids in a much larger school.
Right.
And the sister who runs the school says to me, we want it that way because we want students to feel like they have a space to be in and a home. And small classes where we can give them the attention they need.
Sure.
And these kids go on to good schools and into college so far. And it's an amazing little place.
I know.
So my question is, what do we want? What are advocates like you, Foster and Glenna, and you, Councilman, I know your name. We've known each other for a long time.
Right,
Carl. are looking for. What are you looking for in a larger sense that both will inspire people to talk about what a school system could and should be that's not what we're doing now, and how that also might affect what's going to happen in Annapolis in January?
I'll let the pastor speak first.
I think we want our facilities to adequately convey and reflect how we value our children. I mean, that's it in a nutshell. And we need to recognize that while facilities are certainly not the only factor, we speak about them as the third teacher. And if a child is in a building that's falling apart, that is a not-so-subtle way of communicating to that child, you don't matter, you're not important, your education's not important, we don't think very highly of you, we don't think very highly of the teachers who are in this room, and maybe we don't think so highly about your future either. We want our schools to reflect that we value our children the most. They are the most important priority in all that we do, and I think I would summarize it by saying that.
And I want much higher student achievement. That's what I want. And I want a commitment from our school system and our school leadership and our advocates to much higher student achievement. And I think that I don't want to get into a debate on this broad issue right now, a specific issue, actually. but I want higher student achievement. So many of our children are undereducated or miseducated in our public school system, and it ruins their lives. And I'm not being overdramatic about that. It ruins their lives. They can't sustain themselves or their families when they become of age. When you look at great swaths of East and West Baltimore, it is that way because of our public education system. Even the family unit has been somewhat damaged severely by the Baltimore public school system. People are not able to, frankly, I hate to put it this way, think in a way that allows them to be successful in their lives. And I'm not just talking economically, but in raising their families and their values, et cetera. It takes a larger effort than just the school system, but certainly the school system has been a critical part of the damage there.
We have about a minute left. Glenna Reed, Huber, would you like to close out a thought?
Yeah, I just agree with Councilman Stokes and Pastor Foster Connors. My hope for the children of Baltimore City is that they receive an education that enables them to have a successful future. And I think facilities are a part of that. The teachers are a part of that. Their neighborhoods are a part of that. But if they have pride in their school, in what they're learning, they will have a future. And I think that will bring remarkable changes to Baltimore City.
I would like to thank the Reverends Glenna Reed Huber and Foster Connors, who are the clergy co-chair for BILD, for joining us, taking time off this meeting they're in today to talk with all of our listeners here today. And, of course, Councilman Carl Stokes, 12th District, for coming in.
Sure.
And being part of this conversation.
Thank you.
Erica Green, who has been covering the school system and doing remarkable work in uncovering a lot of stuff. Erica, thanks for staying the whole time with us. It's been a pleasure to have you with us once
Thank
again.
Thank you.
Look forward to see what you come up with next.
Or not.
Or not. And I want to remind everybody, this is the last day to register to vote. You
yes,
have 2 hours left to register to vote. So 9 p.m. tonight, please register to vote if you haven't done so. It's very simple. Go online. voterservices.elections.state.md.us/online-voter-registration. It'll be on our website. You can link from there at steinershow.org. You need to register to vote. Please do that. And wake up with me early tomorrow morning and join me tomorrow morning with the Baltimore Blend, WEA's new wonderful morning program from 6 to 8 p.m. We will be broadcasting live from Red Emma's bookstore located at 800 St. Paul Street. Come on down, have some free coffee, all kinds of party favors and more. 443-885-4391 for more information. Or just show up 6 o'clock tomorrow morning and see what Mark Steiner looks like early in the morning. You might not want to. Anyway, good to have you all with us. I want to remind you the Mark Steiner Show is a production of the Center for Emerging Media. Our senior producer is Justin Levy. Our producers are Bobby Marvin Holmes, Mark Gunnery, and Stephanie Mavronis. We are engineered tonight by Andrew Holt. Our intern is Latrice Eddy. Our theme music is by Wal Matthews of Clean Cuts. If you hear this show again, podcast any of our past shows, find out information about our guests and the work that they do, and other information on our show, please visit us at steinershow.org. And for public radio, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. I'm Mark Steiner. Stay tuned for Wealthy Lifestyles. Take care.